Gary, and this is I'll Have a Beer and Talk, your sort of weekly summary of interesting tech news with a mini beer review on the top. Yep, each week I invite you to join me while I have a beer and talk about stories that I found interesting that I read on the internet. Have you heard of the internet? Why do I do this? I really don't know. If you have an idea, drop me a line. So I had the show mostly prepared for recording yesterday, but also yesterday was the day that the new April update for Windows 10 became available, on the last day of April, of course. And since I have poor impulse control, I downloaded it and installed it on three of my systems. So I had to wait a bit for the install and reboot to finish, make sure everything made it through okay, then it kinda got late in the evening. So here we are the next day. Blame it on the update. Or the rain. Speaking of rain, we had a glorious couple days here in Portland, Oregon last week, where the temperatures were in the upper 70s, we could actually see the sun! It's a rare occurrence here, seeing the dayball not covered by clouds. But since it's only spring, it was what I like to call fake summer, a big old tease. My wife and I did get to enjoy some beers in the sun before it hid itself behind the rain clouds, not to be seen again until June or July. Oh well. Hey, instead of lamenting the loss of sunlight, let's figure out this week's beer! The randomizer is active and should bring up its random choice in a moment. Huh. Oh, really? Alright, randomizer. I've got Santiam Brewing Company's Pirate, an 8% ABV rum oak barrel-aged coconut American stout. Yum. That means it's a dark, roasty beer that spent some time relaxing in an oak barrel that once contained rum, gaining some of the rum's flavor characteristics, then had some coconut added as well. You know, I am feeling a little piratical, so let's release the beer.
Ahar, matey!
As to be expected, it is pitch black with a tan head, and it smells a lot like rum. Delicious. And unsurprisingly, it tastes a lot like rum. Well, actually more like rum cake. I don't know, gingerbread and bourbon. This is kind of weird. I just want to sit here and enjoy. But I have a show to give you, so I'll keep my sips to a minimum and go on with the show. The Verge reports that a Danish firm by the name of Corti, that's C-O-R-T-I, will be rolling out a special AI system in four unnamed locations in Europe this summer, and it's already been rolled out in Copenhagen. What do you think it'll attempt to do? Make you a perfect playlist? Nope. Identify sheep in a field? No, not this time. Attempt to take over the world? Maybe, but for now, this AI will listen in on emergency calls to help the dispatcher identify signs of cardiac arrest in the caller's voice. Cardiac arrest is when an electrical fault develops in the body that causes the heart to stop beating, and time is essential in saving the life of the victim. Their chances of survival drop 7 to 10% per minute without immediate treatment. Corti's AI, which doesn't have a name in the article, but I will refer to it as Beatty, get it, listens to emergency calls and monitors for, quote, verbal and nonverbal patterns of communication. Examples being given the caller's tone of voice and whether or not the victim is breathing. Beatty was tested internally at Corti by having it listen to an historical database of 161,500 emergency calls, and Beatty was able to recognize 93.1% of calls that were involving out-of-hospital cardiac arrests, which are also known as OHCAs. To put that in perspective, human dispatchers presented with the same historical database correctly identified 72.9% of calls involving OHCAs. So you can see how Beatty could be a life-saving assistant. The Verge, however, doing their due diligence, points out that Corti hasn't published all the data from Beatty's tests with that emergency call database, such as its false positive rate or how many times it incorrectly labeled a call as involving OHCA. And Beatty also is unable to explain how it makes its determinations. It wasn't programmed to provide that information. So that may be a cause for concern for medical professionals. But I'm sure with further testing, it can improve any possible false positives. This story, along with two previous ones I've talked about involving AI making health assessments, the previous two by analyzing eye scans, show that advanced artificial intelligence systems are going to be part of future medical care, whether we are ready or not. Future doctors. Dun, 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 dun. Speaking of doctors, let's talk about surgical procedures. Fun times. 2 years ago, I had 2 dental bone grafts made in my lower jaw. Scary, right? You betcha. An hour before the procedure, the periodontist had instructed me to take a tab of triazolam, which they had prescribed, which is similar to Valium, to keep my anxiety in check. Right before they started, the periodontist's assistant did a curious thing. He asked me what kind of music I would like to listen to during the 90-minute surgery. I requested Portishead, as one does, and laid back with some red-filtered glasses as they went to work, so I couldn't see the blood. It went quite smoothly. My mutant healing factor kicked in pretty quickly after the procedure, and the grafts took perfectly. I hadn't thought about the actual surgery in a while until I read a story on Gizmodo about a study showing that music played during surgery not only relieves a patient's anxiety, but also reduces their pain. Dutch researchers, double Dutch stories, published their findings in the British Journal of Surgery. Data was collected from over 80 randomized, blinded, and controlled studies of using music before, during, and after invasive surgery published between 1980 and 2016, all being said involving more than 7,000 patients, comparing their perceptions of pain and anxiety to those of control groups. They found that, regardless of the type of surgery performed or the age or gender of the patients, music being played showed noticeable decreases in pain and anxiety. On a 1 to 100 scale, the music listening group reported their anxiety to be 21 points lower than the control group, and their pain to be 10 points lower. This musically influenced decrease in anxiety and pain was also shown when patients were asked before playing them some music how they were doing, and then after hearing some music. What I found interesting was that it was reported when music was played before surgery, the drop in anxiety was greater, and when the music was played after surgery, the drop in pain was greater, and the lower anxiety and pain effect was slightly better when patients chose the music they heard. Hopefully they chose Portishead. Now, before you just assume that this is all just a placebo effect, the authors of the study say that some of the data they collected were from surgeries where music was played while the patient was unconscious, and those patients also reported lower levels of pain and anxiety. Cool. Lead study author and pediatric surgeon at Erasmus MC Sophia Children's Hospital in the Netherlands, Dr. Rosalie Kuhlmann, said, "This result makes it now possible to create guidelines for the implementation of music interventions around surgical procedures. Hopefully I won't have to have many more surgical procedures in the future, but if I do, I am definitely going to request they play some Portishead." It's not often you hear stories about scientists accidentally discovering something that turns out to be good, but Engadget reported on that very thing. Researchers from the University of Portsmouth and the U.S. Department of Energy's National Renewable Energy Laboratory were studying the structure of a curious little bacterium that was discovered in a waste dump in Japan a few years ago. The bacterium produces an enzyme that digests plastic, and in case you were unawares, humanity is burying the entire ecosystem under enormous amounts of waste plastic, so finding a way of breaking it down will help all living things. Anyway, the researchers were seeing how quickly the little bug could be coaxed to eat plastic, so they tweaked its physical structure a little bit, and you won't believe what happened next. They boosted the bacterium's plastic-eating enzyme's efficiency by 20%. Not only that, but the enzyme breaks down the plastic back into its original components. Research leader for the University of Portsmouth, Professor John McGeehan, said the discovery was, quote, a bit of a shock, in what I don't think I need to tell you is a bit of an understatement. McGeehan believes that the enzyme could be further manipulated to make it the perfect solution for dealing with plastic waste. Enzymes are already used in similarly tweaked forms industrially. They're used to produce efficient detergents and high-energy biofuels. It gives us scope to use all the technology used in other enzyme development for years and years and make a super-fast enzyme, McGeehan said, and that the potential performance improvements that could be made to the enzyme and its breakdown powers, quote, means we won't need to dig up any more oil, and fundamentally, it should reduce the amount of plastic in the environment. Happy accidents! Hooray! Hey, you. Were you aware that this show's sponsor is Portland's only community handmade papermaking studio? No? Well, let me tell you about it. I'm talking about Pulp and Deckel, and its mission is to keep the art of papermaking alive with workshops, demonstrations, creating and selling beautiful handmade paper products, and working with artists in creating all types of art through the medium of papermaking. Browse a rotating selection of papermaking workshops, inquire about custom orders, take an online recycled papermaking class, and check out all the amazing things we do with the ancient art of papermaking by visiting pulpanddeckel.com. That is PULPANDDECKLE.com. Hey, hey you. If you mention I'll Have a Beer and Talk when talking to Pulp and Deckel, we might give you something special. Hey, remember last week when I told you about fire-sensing wallpaper made from bone, hormones, and graphene? Well, Engadget posted a story about another future wall technology. Touch sensitivity! Disney Research Pittsburgh, which is a real thing, I just learned, and researchers at Carnegie Mellon University published a research paper, as researchers do, on how to turn walls into interactive infrastructure. They even have a prototype called Wall++ that can not only receive input via touch and gestures, but can sense things nearby, like active appliances and even bodies. Hopefully living bodies. The Wall++ was also conceived as an easy install. The researchers developed a water-based nickel paint that could be applied to any wall in a diamond pattern with a regular paint roller, then connected the electrodes with copper tape, applied vinyl stickers as insulation over the wiring, and covered the whole thing with vinyl paint as a top coat. The resulting smart wall was then demonstrated as being able to detect touch input and hovering, and collect enough sensor data to enable a linked system to estimate the pose of a nearby body or active nearby appliances. When linked to a wristband that produces constant 1.5 megahertz signals, the wall can even track individuals that were wearing those wristbands. The whole idea is that instead of having permanent light switches, you could use gestures on the wall to turn on, dim, or turn off lights, turn volume up and down, activate blinds, and just about anything you'd normally have physical control for. I, for example, kitted out our living room with white Philips Hue smart bulbs. Normally, my wife and I control them with verbal commands via the living room Google Home, but for the annual mother-in-law visit, I had to buy a physical remote switch so as not to confuse and or frustrate her when the Google Home has performance anxiety and won't respond to commands. It would be really cool if I could just have the walls act as the physical interface instead of having that ugly remote switch. Unfortunately, Wall++ is just a proof of concept, so there's no point in me throwing money at the screen. But since the concept itself is estimated to be possible, with the low, low cost of $21 per square meter, I'm sure someone will attempt to buy the rights and offer Wall++ to the public. I think all it needs is the fire-sensing ability, and then it would be perfect. In fact, I'm gonna go steal those ideas right now. Hey, let's talk about artificial intelligence again! That's the best transition I could come up with since I neglected to put this story right after the previous AI story. Derp. Anyway, The Verge reports that researchers from the University of Washington and the Allen Institute for AI are going to the dogs. Literally. They have recently trained neural networks to interpret and predict the behavior of puppers. Cool, but why the hell are they doing this? They are working on canine behavior prediction as a source of new training data for AI systems that would control robots. To get the doggo thoughts, they enlisted the assistance of a Malamute named Kelp. With Kelp's approval, they outfitted the Barkie with a head-mounted GoPro camera and motion capture sensors on the legs and body, and made a total of 380 motion-synced short videos with the setup, recording the hound's motions as Kelp went about a normal poochie day's activities, walking, running, and playing fetch in the park. All that woofy motion was fed into the neural network for a bit of deep learning processing, and what came out kinda sorta worked. The neural network trained with doggy data could predict what Fido would possibly do based on the information. For example, if a ball was thrown, the system predicted the man's best friend would chase it. The system showed itself to be quite accurate, but only in brief bursts. When presented with a set of stairs, the system could predict that El Perro would probably go up them, but from there the system went all shruggy. There were too many variables to predict what could happen at the top of the stairs. Whether or not the dog will see a toy or an object it wants to chase, who knows? Kiana Essani, a PhD student at the University of Washington, told The Verge. The researchers then took their electronic mutt brain and put it into situations where it might demonstrate activities not explicitly programmed into the neural network. They gave it two tests, tasking the network to identify different scenes, such as indoors, outdoors, on stairs, on a balcony, etc., and to identify, quote, walkable surfaces, meaning things it could safely walk on. Working with just the basic dataset of Wolfie's behavior and movements in a physical space, the neural network was able to complete both tasks with decent accuracy. Our intuition for this was that dogs are really good at finding where to walk, where they're allowed to go, and where they're not, says Asani. This is a very hard task for a computer because it requires a lot of prior knowledge. Knowing if a service can be safely trod upon without falling down is kind of essential for autonomous robots, so the fact that it worked is awesome. It is important to point out that this neural network isn't actually a thinking, living thing. But Asani pointed out that this is the first time anyone has attempted to train neural networks with input data from a Bow Wow, and that animal motions in general would be a boon to making systems that could potentially control robot movements. Me, I hope this means that a certain tin dog by the name of K9 could be on the horizon. And Asani seems to echo that thought. One immediate thing that comes to mind is making a robot dog. It's already a hard task for a robot to know how to move and where to go, or if they want to chase something, she said. This would definitely help us in building a more efficient and better robot dog. Complete with a nose blaster, I hope.
Affirmative. An efficient machine.
Hey, let's talk about birds. Or burbs, as the kids call them. Specifically hummingbirds. Or humming burbs. Whatever way you want to say it, hummingbirds are awesome. We actually have a pair that like to frequent the yard here above the bunker, which we have named Barry and Iris, because they move really fast. You'd be surprised to know, though, that not a lot of research has been done on hummingbirds. A pair of researchers at the University of California, Riverside, are trying to rectify that, and have studied 6 hummingbirds in an acoustic wind tunnel in an effort to study how the males dance to get the attention of a female in a cage in the tunnel. They noticed a curious behavior. The males would dive to the side of the female instead of directly in front to impress her, which the researchers believe changes the sound of their dives to give the impression they're moving faster than they really are. I guess with hummingbirds, the faster you are, the more attractive you are to a mate. So the hummingbirds are essentially buying fast cars to impress the ladies. The hummingbirds are taking advantage of what's called the Doppler shift. In case you don't know what that is, here's a definition. An apparent change in the frequency of waves, as of sound or light, occurring when the source and observer are in motion relative to each other, with the frequency increasing when the source and observer approach each other and decreasing when they move apart. So the males change their dive angle to hide the fact they're faking going really fast, and they're also pointing their tail feathers towards the female, which increases the volume of the noise. Look at me, ladies, I'm fast and loud. So, what does a hummingbird dive sound like, you might be asking? It sounds like a fast spaceship. Seriously, I found this clip on YouTube. Now, the dive is played twice at regular speed, then there's a slowed down version that follows it. Are you ready? The researchers published their study in Current Biology, if you'd like to know more. And now for a horse of a different color. New Scientist says that, quote, horses remember if you smiled or frowned when they last saw you, end quote. Let that sink in for a minute. Ready to move on? In 2016, University of Portsmouth, UK's Leanne Proops and her colleagues showed that horses respond differently to photos of happy or angry human faces. But that wasn't enough. So they opened Pandora's box to see if horses can form lasting memories of people based on the person's facial expressions. There are some avenues that science just shouldn't go down, but nevertheless, they persisted. They showed horses a photo of one of 2 human models with a look of happiness or angriness on their face. Hours later, the model they had seen a photo of physically interacted with the horses. The all-important control for this experiment was some horses saw a different human model in the second part than from the photo from the first part of the experiment. And the models themselves didn't know if the horse saw a photo of them or someone else when they went to see Mr. Horse. Fun fact, horses prefer to look at negative things with their left eye, and positive things with their right eye. In the experiment, if the model they physically met had been frowning in the photo they saw earlier, they regarded the human with their left eye and showed stress-related behaviors like floor sniffing and scratching. If they saw a model they had been smiling in the photo, they gazed upon them with their right eye. That's something we haven't really seen in animals before, says Proops. The evidence pointing towards the fact that horses seem to be able to form an opinion of people based on their expression in a photograph. So they'd be really good at Tinder. It's very weird, but it's actually explainable. The horse family has the most expressive faces after the primates, so logically they pay attention to faces and expressions, says Franz de Waal at Emory University in Atlanta. Horses surrounded by people have ample opportunity to learn what our expressions mean. So remember, smile at every horse you meet and make sure they only see photos of you smiling. You don't want a horse to hate you, do you? Hello everyone. Did you know this show is not only supported by Pulp and Deckel, but that it's supported by listeners like you? If you enjoy the show, want to join in on the wackiness? I've got three choices for you. You can always hire me for some voice and audio production work. I can do voicemail messages, mediocre acting, bad singing, and some adequate audio production. I actively edit and produce this show. I co-host, edit, and produce the Many Happy Returns podcast, and I edit the Paper Talk podcast. I edit everything. If you feel you or someone you know might have use for the best part of my body, which happens to be my voice and my brain, let me know. Email me at gary@pulpanddeckel.com. That is gary@pulpanddeckel.com. Rates are reasonable. And hey, if you rate and review the show on iTunes, the more I have as discoverability will go up for people looking for Beery Tech Podcast on iTunes. It shows up as a recommended suggestion, and if I could just reach one more potential listening human brain out of an infinite number of human brains based on what iTunes suggests, I consider that a win. And as always, you can support the show directly with money. If you enjoy what you're hearing each episode, you can donate at least $1 a month to the show at patreon.com/ihabitradio. That is patreon.com/ihabitradio. Go to patreon.com/ihabitradio and become my patron. You'll be joining a very attractive and intelligent group of people that already support me there. And to them, you know that $1 goes a very long way and is deeply appreciated. Thank you all!
Arr!
Oh, that pirate beer was good. Oh, it's really, really good.
Ahoy! Wahoo! Wahoo!
Well, shiver me timbers. Arr!
Yeah, I found a pirate soundboard. I'm going to put that away now. Anyway, I finished the beer, so that means it's time for me to go. As always, please tell your family, friends, neighbors, pets, plants, aliens, and robot dogs about the show and that they can find it on Google Play Music, on iTunes, on Podomatic, on Stitcher, and on Spreaker. And please send me feedback, story suggestions, and beer recommendations to gary@pulpanddeckel.com or on the Twitters and Instagram at ihaveitradio. Or even on the Facebook at facebook.com/ihabitradio. It's time for me to go. I will see you in the future. Bye-bye!